And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Braddon. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Hey, not much, Shane. I don't know if you saw this or not, but my guys from Part of My Take podcast, they named Jeremy Pruitt their football guy of the week. For anyone that doesn't follow Part of My Take podcast, it's pretty clever. I mean, they mostly stick to NFL, so definitely not a source for college football information, really, in my opinion, but they are two funny dudes.
Oh, yeah. I've always liked that show.
And speaking of why they named Jeremy Pruitt their football guy of the week, they said the Tennessee head coach cried after a 38-12 loss to Georgia because he was so proud of his players for not giving up.
I mean, how do you feel about that? I mean, are you excited as a Tennessee fan, or are you like, you know, I don't know if that's the news clip we want out there.
Well, like I said, these guys are really funny in my opinion, but I don't think they follow college football and particularly SEC football that closely. So I'm going to just assume they didn't even watch the game, because while it was a 26-point game there, I mean, there was doubt, at least, you know, a shred of doubt there in the fourth quarter that Tennessee was, you know, I mean, they were damn going for two to bring it within two scores. So,
right.
I mean, I understand. I think they were just kind of missing the point there of kind of like why he was getting emotional there. But I think it would have more to do with a team that just got their ass kicked by the biggest game of the year for a lot of fans' eyes, the Florida game. And then they turn around against the number two team in the nation at Athens and played a solid game. So I think it had obviously a lot more to do with that.
Yeah, and I was just surprised, man. I really wasn't expecting that from Coach Pruitt. He just seems like such a hard ass, you know. But yeah, man, he's all in. He's bought all in.
But the main reason we wanted to bring this up, not to talk all day about damn Pardon My Take, but one of their readers sent in a note to them. They said they have no idea if this is true, so we also have no idea if this is true, but it was too funny not to share. So this is a follower of Pardon My Take, and here's his comment. I love that Jeremy Pruitt was nominated as Football Guy of the Week, and I'd like to share another football guy story with you all about him. Now, Jeremy Pruitt was my girlfriend's second grade PE teacher down in Fort Payne, Alabama. And you know how as a little kid in PE, the kids get to vote on what they wanted to play? Well, one time all the kids in her class voted to play soccer 3 days in a row. So Coach Pruitt broke all the soccer goals at the elementary school. So they had no choice but to play football. That's about as football guy as it gets.
That's awesome. Oh, I like it. It says, no idea if this is remotely true, but in the spirit of journalism, we're going to choose to believe it. That's awesome. I choose to believe it, too.
All right, Shane, enough about all that. We wanted to start by discussing the Week 7 kickoffs and TV information. The SEC releases that information every Monday around noon. And so this is, of course, we are heading into week six, but this is, so this is a week out. This is the October 13 game. So not next weekend, but the following weekend, but Tennessee at Auburn. That's the first game. It's going to be at noon, and that's going to be either on ESPN or the SEC network.
Mm-hmm.
The other noon game, Florida at Vanderbilt. So, again, the Tennessee-Auburn, Florida-Vanderbilt, one will be on an ESPN, the other will be SEC Network, and I think that all depends on who wins Week 6. The big game of the week, CBS-SEC game, has been selected. It's Georgia at LSU at 3:30 kickoff Eastern time. That's going to be a hell of a game.
Yeah.
Texas A&M at South Carolina. That's going to be at 3:30 on the SEC Network. Missouri at Alabama. That's going to be the 7 o'clock Saturday night ESPN game. And finally, Ole Miss at Arkansas. This is going to be the Little Rock game. That'll be at 7:30 Eastern time on SEC Network. Thoughts on that schedule, Shane?
Tennessee's a noon game. Gotta love it. I think it kind of does work in our favor because usually those games are sluggish to begin with. So maybe that's what we need, catch Auburn off guard. I'm really, really looking forward to that Georgia at LSU game. I really wish they would have put that one at night, though. I know CBS wants the best game, but golly, could you imagine Death Valley there at night with Georgia and LSU battling back and forth, especially if they beat Florida?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the only issue there for LSU for having success. They run the risk of getting these CBS games, and I think I read a stat where three of the last five LSU games have been at this 3:30 slot, and I don't think most LSU fans, like you noted, they prefer the night game for mm-hmm. the tailgating and just the atmosphere and just that team's record at night in Death Valley. So, you know, I don't know if there's much credence to that just because at the same time when people want to look at that stat, you know, the last two or three years maybe have been a little bit down at LSU, but beyond that, the decade before, I mean, this is a hell of a team full of, I mean, they annually are on the list of most NFL players. So you put those games at noon, you put them at midnight, I think LSU is still going to be kicking ass. So I don't know how much stock I put into that, because obviously, even if this is at 3:30, the crowd's going to be intense for this one.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a great one.
And what about this Texas A&M South Carolina game, Shane? So South Carolina has never beaten A&M since they joined the SEC. This could be a real make or break game coming off. I mean, South Carolina continues to disappoint. If they lose to Missouri, now they host A&M. I mean, the season could be unraveling quick here.
Yeah, it's kind of depending on, like right now, if they're playing this week, absolutely, I'd be looking forward to this game. But depending on what happens this week, both these teams don't have cupcakes coming home, so mm-hmm. this could not be as relevant next week. So, but let's just say hypothetically they both win. A&M pulls off, well, not really the upset because they're favored, and then South Carolina beats Missouri. Now all of a sudden this is a crucial game, especially if you're looking at bowls later in the season.
Now on the flip side, Shane, let's say Missouri beats South Carolina this upcoming weekend. Week 7, they travel to Alabama. We assume, obviously, Alabama's going to beat Arkansas. Any chance there that this is a sneaky good game with Drew Locke and those receivers going to Alabama?
Could, absolutely. But on the flip side of the coin, if that did happen, I mean, are we talking maybe like a little hot seat situation there in South Carolina?
You're saying if South Carolina, if they keep losing all these games?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of people expecting a lot of things. They put in a lot of money this year in the facilities, and mm-hmm. fan base is really behind South Carolina, and it's not, the season's not going like they had planned. And if they drop this game against Missouri and Texas A&M, I mean, golly, I mean, it seems to me like Muschamp, I don't think it's a must win, but he definitely does need a victory sooner than later.
You know, Shane, probably my favorite thing about you is your school has not won an SEC game in almost 700 days, and you're eager to put everyone on the damn hot seat.
I demand excellence, Mike. I don't know, man. I was so high on South Carolina at the start of the season. I'm just totally disappointed. So if I'm disappointed as a Volunteer fan, I can only imagine what Gamecock fans feel like.
All right, Shane. So enough of all that. Let's get into the Monday news around the league.
Now let's go around the league. Around the league.
Around the league. We haven't decided how we're going to play the guys. So, and I wouldn't tell you if I did. So, you know. I don't mind you asking a question, but I don't need to answer it.
No, I mean, I'll be whistling Rocky Top by the end of the week. All our players, I mean, it's just like, right? I mean, just hear it over and over, and, you know, like every other or every third song, it'll roll through within the crowd noise that we play at practice. So you just you get used to it. It's a catchy tune, right? I mean,
this game's going to be a street fight. This game's going to be a street fight. I mean, some of you guys don't know who Kimbo Slice is. Hopefully you do. And you go back to it, man, this isn't a sanctioned fight. This is a street fight. I mean, this is the SEC. So, man, it's time. It's time to put on the hard hat, lunch pail, let's get to work.
All right, Shane, starting off in Gainesville. Dan Mullen coming off that huge win at Mississippi State. The Gators are actually ranked in the AP poll, and I believe they're ranked number 22 in the nation. Florida hosting LSU. Dan Mullen is calling the fans to bring it. He wants a sellout crowd, and he talks about the importance of that. So here's Dan Mullen speaking on that.
I imagine it'll be a big recruiting weekend for us. There'll be lots of guys come and you know, just in big games. You know, I just think generally speaking, when you look at recruiting, a lot of the recruits and players that are out there around the country, a lot of high school guys, they want to come see big games. And when you have one, it's a pretty special deal. So, hopefully people get to come and enjoy the atmosphere. I expect it, to not be an open seat anywhere in the swamp. I expect to see people on their feet, you know. I mean, a great challenge. This should be fun for our student body. I think it's a great challenge out there because, you know what, I think if you look in college football, student bodies set the tempo and really set the atmosphere for everybody else out there. And I think the student body, and you look at, with the student government already getting in with the wear blue and all of that, and the student body gets in, and because they come in and they're on their feet, jumping up and down, going crazy in the game, I think the rest of the crowd feeds off of that. So that's one of the things I want us to get back to, is having the student body be, really dominating the environment.
All right, Shane, so Dan Mullen's trying to get the crowd pumped up there in the swamp. What are your thoughts?
Is this thing not sold out? That's my first thought. This is the Florida Gators, 4-1, going against the number 5 LSU Tigers. How can this thing not be sold out?
Well, do you remember heading into the season, we kind of talked about this, where season ticket sales were down, and just I think they continue to trend down, and a lot of that had to do with the fact that outside of this LSU game, I mean, there's no other good games on the slate. They got Charleston Southern, Kentucky, Colorado mm-hmm. State, Missouri, South Carolina, and Idaho. Those are their other home games. So, for whatever reason, these tickets were not being sold. I think at low expectations and just that home slate. So I'd have to assume that they're not sold out for this one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a surprise to me. But I think by the time it gets there, they'll have this thing sold out. And that's what they need. They need everything to win this game. So a sold-out fan base, the swamp loud, it's 3:30 game. I mean, everything's working in their favor there. So hopefully he doesn't have to beg too much this week for that.
Now, another thing I wanted to hit on here, Shane Mullen was asked about Felipe Franks and just his development, obviously, in the first year of the Mullen offense. Mm-hmm. We're going to play these clips, and then we'll jump into that.
Okay.
Well, I think one of the areas he's grown the most is understanding the game plan from week to week a little bit, because it changes. Even running the same play, we might want to run it a little bit differently from one week to the next. And I think he's grown in starting to understand that, this is how we want to run this play against this look, and this is where we're going on how they're playing us. And he's worked and understood that, of what the game plan is and what we're trying to do, what we're trying to accomplish. Areas to improve, the biggest one, like any quarterback ever, is, getting through multiple progressions, standing in the pocket. And that's a process now. That is a long process of not just going from 1 to 2, but going from 1 to 2 to 3. And then if you get really good, 1, 2, 3 to 4 to 5. Usually guys that can do that and are very accurate get paid an awful lot of money. And they don't play on Saturdays. They play on Sundays.
All right, Shane. So Felipe Franks, he's having an all right year. I think he's either first or second in the SEC in touchdown passes. But, I don't necessarily think he's tearing it up. I think he's, feasting on Colorado State and Charleston Southern and the like of that, because, look back at this Mississippi State game. The only touchdown Florida scored, they had to call a trick play. What are your thoughts on Felipe Franks so far?
I think he's been more efficient this year. Last year he threw a lot of picks, and of course, Last week he did too. You know, he threw a bonehead pick, almost got him in a bad situation. But even Dan on his conference call talked about, you know, they were able to make a three and out. His defense has saved him, which is great. You could probably do that against Tennessee, and you could probably do that against Mississippi State. You may not be able to do that against teams like LSU. So I really think that he's going to have to really be efficient. And like I said, he's been doing better, but, you know, it hasn't been great, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the flip side of this, Ed Orgeron, he also met with the media, of course, on Monday.
Go Tigers.
And I don't know why this, you know, stuck out to me, but, you know, I don't know if you know this, Shane, but old Tom Petty, Gainesville native, former groundskeeper there at Florida, he's beloved there. And following his death last year, they started playing Tom Petty at the end of the third quarter, into the start of the fourth. And they just started doing that to get, you know, the fans going and whatnot. And
yeah.
Ed Orgeron says that played a part. He thought in LSU, kind of their comeback last year. So we're going to play these clips from Ed Orgeron on what he remembers from playing at Florida last year, heading into this year.
I think the way when we got out there, it was probably the hottest place we had been. And I remember being in a pregame warm-up. We went out there because we didn't want any distractions. The year before, we had some distractions. I think we had a fight before. Our team wasn't ready to play. We had too many turnovers. We made sure our coaches were on the field. We made sure there was no distractions there. I remember the heat. I remember telling Coach Jenkins to go in. I was afraid he was going to pass out. It was so hot. I remember that. And then I remember the leadership on our football team came through that day. And I remember them missing the extra point. And guys like Rashard Lawrence and Devin White saying we're going to win this football game regardless. So those are the things, a hard-fought battle. I remember on the start of the fourth quarter, they're playing the Hey Baby, There Ain't No Easy Way Out, We Won't Back Down by Tom Petty. And I thought it was a tremendous time for our football team because we were singing it too. And it's going to be a battle. It's going to be a war. It's going to take 60 minutes. This is a rivalry game. It comes down to one play or two. So those are the things I remember.
All right, Shane. So obviously LSU back-to-back years having to play in Gainesville because of that whole hurricane drama a couple years ago when LSU got to host this game 2 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on old Orgeron saying Tom Petty, he thought it kind of helped his team win this one?
Yeah, it probably did, man. You know, it's kind of – This rivalry has been really close the last few years. I don't know if you remember. In 16, mm-hmm. I was really watching because there's a lot of volunteers hoping that Florida would lose since we lost to them earlier in the season. That's back when we thought we still had a chance to go somewhere. But they played them close, and Florida ended up winning that game. And last year, I think it was just a one-point game. So that's what I love about this rivalry is the fact that it's not extremely lopsided. Every game is usually within a score. In fact, I got the scores here. 16-17 was the last one. Mm-hmm. 16-10 before that. 28-35, so again, a touchdown. 27-30. So the last, you know, 5 years, it's been within a score. So I'm excited about this game, man. I think it's going to be a defensive – I mean, it's going to be some tough-nosed football, if you ask me.
Yeah, and one of the Florida players, I believe it was Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, I think he goes by now, but he said this is the biggest game of the year for Florida, in his opinion. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do too. Because we talked about this yesterday, just the fact that if they're able to pull this game off, if they're able to beat the top five team in the nation, then they're relevant again. Not mm-hmm. saying that they're not. I mean, they've only lost one game, and it was to an undefeated Kentucky, which turns out to be a pretty good ball team. But if they were to play again, I mean, maybe Florida comes away with the victory here. This is their chance to say, hey, we're relevant. This is – Florida Gators are legit. So, yeah, definitely. I see this being obviously the biggest game of the season for them.
Now, quickly, Shane, here, this is something I had no idea about, but – Ed Orgeron also discussed this today. Apparently, back when Orgeron was out of a job, before he, you know, that weird transition where he wanted the USC job and didn't get it, and
mm-hmm.
he got hired on eventually, obviously, by Les Miles to be the defensive line coach at LSU. Apparently, he interviewed with Dan Mullen down there at Mississippi State, and Dan Mullen did not offer him the job. So here's Ed Orgeron on that, and then we'll break that down.
You know, Dan's a friend of mine. I was out for a year. I went up there to speak at their clinic, and I spent a couple of days with their staff. Was very impressed the way they coach, very impressed with their defense. Spent a couple of days up there. I did interview with him. He did not offer me the job, and I'm glad because I ended up at LSU. So it all worked out.
All right, Chan, I think in somewhat of a weird alternate universe, Ed Orgeron, Mississippi State head coach right now. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, it's got to stick in his craw a little bit. He may mention that they're friends, and maybe they are, but I mean, it was just 2 seconds later he's saying, but they didn't, you know, they didn't give me the job. They didn't give me an interview. So, he did the interview. They just didn't call him back for the job, I think is what he said. But, but he did make mention that if that would have happened, he may not be a head coach at LSU. So, you know, everything worked out for a reason. You know, there's nothing coach wants more than to be the head coach LSU Tigers, but it's still got to stick back there, the fact that he didn't get a job. I mean, we've all been in that type of situation before.
All right, Shane, let's jump to College Station. Jimbo Fisher also met with the media on Monday.
Giga Maggies.
And, of course, they've got a really big game here coming up. They're hosting undefeated Kentucky. I think this is a huge game for both teams. Kentucky has got a chance to, you know, I still continue to see people on Twitter, for whatever reason, they doubt this team. They doubt Benny Snell. I think they're just idiots that have not watched them. But at the same time, you know, they are the underdogs in this one. A&M's got a chance to kind of, you know, prove they are up-and-coming program here in the SEC. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you compound all that, Mark Stoops, Jimbo Fisher also have a strong relationship that I kind of forgot about here, but Mark Stoops was Jimbo Fisher's defensive coordinator there at Florida State before he became the Kentucky head coach. And that's something that Fisher hit on in his Monday presser.
And Mark's doing a heck of a lesson. I know Mark was my defense coordinator at Florida State. He is one heck of a football coach, comes from a great family of football coaches, and knows how to win, knows how to play, and does a great job with that team. He's built a heck of a team. And you got a very experienced team. When you're in fourth and fifth year, even like in redshirt fifth year guys, those guys don't make many mistakes in what they do. So it's going to be a really challenge. And then on top of that, they're playing with a lot of confidence and playing very well. So we'll have our hands full. We need to get better, fix the issues of which we have, is continue to grow as a team and hopefully play a great game this weekend.
All right, Shane. So obviously Stoops has learned from Fisher, and I'm sure Fisher learned a little bit from Stoops here. I don't think that's going to be a huge factor in this game, but it adds a little intrigue to this one, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, a little bit. I don't think it's a huge deal, but like you said, I think it may make a little bit of a difference. Just like the fact that the last – did you know – I'm just looking at this. I think it's fascinating. Do you know the last time that Kentucky played Texas A&M?
1952.
Oh, you were close. 1953. The series is tied at 1-1, so I don't know if that loss is still hanging around in that locker room.
It's kind of like the Florida streak. They've not beaten them since 1953.
That's right, 7-6, A&M won. So I didn't realize that. I mean, of course, you know, the way the conference is set up, some of these guys don't play each other for a long time. But 1953, yeah, that has to be one of the longest ones there. So,
and one other note from Fisher's presser. I thought this was pretty interesting comments here, but the Texas A&M coach was asked about Benny Snell, and, you know, A&M is number one in the SEC in rush defense. They're only allowing 85 rushing yards a game. Kentucky, the number one rushing offense in the SEC with over 259 rushing yards average per game. And Fisher was just asked about his defense and asked about defending Benny Snell. And he made a pretty interesting comparison here, so we'll play this clip.
I think we're playing the run really well. And that's one of the things in that game I thought we did an excellent job of making that, you know, of rushing and rush defense, and that's going to start with that. We're going to have to. We're going to get challenged because, like I said before, it's not when there's no yards there, and you look down and say, "Well, we got him." It's second and five. It's second. I mean, I've never seen a guy that can wiggle and for a lack of a better term, he reminds me of the way Emmitt used to run. I mean, Emmitt had the big plays, and we did all that, but Emmitt made yards on everything he did. You know what I'm saying? I mean, back in the day when you really watched him, you think, "Well, they got him." At the end of the day, he'd have 25 carries for about 160. Where did that come from? I mean, it's just constantly moving the chains. And he runs, and he's strong, and he's powerful. And all of a sudden, he breaks out. He's a very patient, and he finds space in places there aren't spaces there shouldn't be. You know what I'm saying? And it's going to be a huge challenge. And we're playing the run very well, so it's going to be, you know, we're going to have to really tighten it down and tighten those screws to make sure. Because and then all of a sudden the quarterback's dynamic, so you can't forget that and totally commit there because he's so explosive in how he moves.
All right, Shane, can you see this a little bit? Benny Snell compared to Emmitt Smith. What are your thoughts on that one?
You know, I can see that because Emmitt always had the tendency to fall forward. And like he said, you know, you may think that you had him in the backfield or at the line of scrimmage, but next thing you know, Benny's got 3 yards or, you know, he's got 5 yards. Next thing he's moving the chains. Next thing you know, it's the end of the game. There's 160 yards. And you're like, what the hell? I thought we did good against the rush, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just kind of how he is. He's just – He is a kind of like a slow wait till he sees something and then he just attacks the whole kind of running back. And that's why he's the leading rusher right now.
Yeah. And oh, final note here on A&M, Jamon Osborne, their outstanding receiver. He's a true sophomore here. He was kind of flourishing in the Fisher system. He is going to be out for at least several weeks. Fisher said 3 to 4 weeks at minimum. He could be lost for the season potentially. He didn't say that, but he just said basically there's no timeline on the return. And with this, you know, the meat of the season coming up here, that could be a tough blow for the Aggies.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, again, we've pumped up Benny Snell quite a bit. Let's not forget on the other side of the ball you got Williams. And Williams is only 50 yards behind Benny as far as yards rushing. So I think this is going to be an exciting ground and pound type game. So I'm really looking forward to both running backs in this one.
Now on the other sideline of this one from Lexington, Mark Stoops met with the media. And I thought the most interesting thing to come out of this, he had a long presser, but he was basically asked about, you know, beating Florida, beating Mississippi State, beating South Carolina, now getting on a roll. How do they continue to have this chip on their shoulder when they're having all this success? And I thought his answer was pretty interesting. So we'll play this and then we'll discuss it.
No, we don't need that. You know, we didn't need it last week. You know, we knew South Carolina was going to be a hungry football team. You know, they're a good, well-coached team that we had beaten and, you know, for several years. And you knew they were going to come in with an attitude and an edge. And we didn't need any extra motivation last week. We needed to play a little bit cleaner football, and we could have put that game away a lot earlier than we did. And it's going to be the same way this week. We have great respect for A&M and Jimbo, as I just mentioned, and playing in that environment. It's going to be, you know, a real challenge for our players. But we don't need any extra motivation. We want to try to get a win. And we got to be able to handle that situation, handle that environment, handle the fact that it's a big game. On national TV, and then, you know, we got to get down to execute and playing good football.
All right, Shane, so Mark Stoops doesn't believe they need this chip on their shoulder. Do you think that they will, or, you know, them opening as the underdog, could that play a factor in that chip?
Yeah, he's coming out saying that it's not, but I guarantee if you got a mic in that locker room, that's the first thing they're talking about is, look, here we are undefeated, and yet again, we're the underdogs. Every game, I mean, what are they ranked now, Kentucky?
I think they're 14th in the AP poll.
And is Texas A&M even ranked?
They are not, no.
I mean, how can you not have a chip on your shoulder? How can that not get brought up or be a factor in motivating your team? It's us against the world right now. And, you know, that's what he's preaching, that never get complacent. We're never there. We're not there. We're not to the summit yet. We got to keep going. Benny's got to keep running. This line's got to keep blocking. So, yeah, I guarantee he's using this as a motivational tool. He's just coming out and playing hardball. But that I guarantee if you get behind them doors, that's exactly what he's saying.
Yeah, I mean, how could he not be? That's what's been fueling him all season long. Continue mm-hmm. to get data. Like I said, there's people coming out questioning him. And kind of like we touched on in the last episode, I appreciate everything Tua's doing. But, I mean, they're ready to give him the damn Heisman, and he's not even playing fourth quarters while Benny Snell's grounding it out and just punishing opponents week after week after week. I don't see how this team doesn't have a huge chip on their shoulder, and I think that's going to continue to hit at College Station.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, Shane, so let's jump to Starkville. the other side of the coin here, not going so well for Joe Moorhead. And do you hear that? Do you hear that sound, Shane?
Sounds like a little hot seat talk, Mike.
Oh my God, we're burning alive!
Damn hot, real hot. Hotter than this is my shorts. I can cook things in it. Little crotch pot cooking. Oh, can you tell me what it feels like? Fool, what is hot? I told you again. Were you born on the sun? It's damn hot.
Yeah, that's the, there it is, Shane. Hot seat talk in Starkville after five games only. Mississippi State fans, they've started up firejomo.com. They're ready to get his ass out of there. Thoughts on wanting to fire a coach five games into his tenure?
I don't know, man. You know me. I want to fire them all. I'm with them. Mississippi State's lost some games, and it's been embarrassing to watch. I mean, the fact that they went up to Kentucky and just got just demolished, and then you let Florida come to your house during the wideout. The old coach coming back, you know, he's high-fiving the grounds crew because they still remember each other, and you know, it just make a mockery out of you on your own field. So yeah, you got to be a little upset if you're a Mississippi State. I mean, you got to be extremely upset if you're a Mississippi State fan, because this ain't even the toughest damn teams you play this year.
No, and that's something that Joe Moorhead met with the media on Monday, and he kind of discussed about, you know, just his team. One of his safety, Jonathan Abram, kind of stood up and addressed the team, and he also talked about vowing to get things right here in Starkville. So we're going to play these two clips from Moorhead, and then we can discuss those.
And I think a guy that's not on either of those but has kind of stepped to the forefront to become a great leader for us is Jonathan Abram. He's a guy after the game, when it was very emotional, and obviously guys, you know, weren't pleased with the outcome, you know, stepped in front of the team, you know, before I had a chance to talk, and talked about how the team was in the exact same position as last year after five games, being 3-2, and certainly coming off a 31-3 loss to Georgia and a 49-10 loss to Auburn, that we have, you know, the entire season in front of us, plenty of room to improve, and like I said, being here to elevate the program from good to great. That's something that we're going to have to do, and I was proud of Jonathan for kind of stepping up and taking a great leadership role there and letting the guys know that there's plenty to play for and plenty of things we need to do to improve. Great thing about Mississippi State and our fan base and our community is that, you know, they're with you. It ain't fair weather fans. They're with you win, lose, or draw. They're going to come out, and you know, I wear a double-sided headset, but I couldn't, you know, so I couldn't hear the bells, but had family members there and friends, and they said it was the loudest environment they had ever been in any college football setting. So you know, I appreciate the heck out of our fans. You know, I know that they love the Bulldogs, and certainly they may not love what we're doing right now, particularly on the offensive side. But I promise you it's going to get fixed. It's going to get better. And the light at the end of the tunnel, it's an opening, not an oncoming train. So we're going to get there.
All right, Shane. So Moorhead kind of makes a good point here. Mississippi State was also 3-2 at this point last year, coming off two big losses. But, you know, at the same time, what did he say when he got there? Championship standard, trying to raise the bar. You know, he should be trying to do better than 3-2. And no one had Mississippi State at 3-2 at this point heading into the year.
No, for sure. And I mean, I don't know. Just to compare last year and this year, I don't think that's right, because this year they were expecting big things. They were expecting to compete in the West, Mike. And
well, they're still undefeated in the West, looking at it that way.
Well, good point. Good point. And I don't know, man. I don't know. I just don't know about this guy. Do you think he's the coach next year? Right now, if you had to place money on it?
Yeah, next year, for sure. I think. I'm not like you. I'm not ready to fire everybody after a couple of games here. But I think you got to give a guy 3 years to show what he can do.
Well, he said they were in the same position last year with two losses. But mm-hmm. last year was against 11th-ranked Georgia and 13th-ranked Auburn. And, I mean, so are you saying that this is the same type of situation that Florida and Kentucky? I'm not having it, Mike. Georgia competed for a national championship last year, mm-hmm. and Auburn was in the SEC championship. So I'm not saying that Kentucky and Florida won't be there, but just to say, it's just to compare last year's schedule to this, I don't know. It just sounds like my high school coach trying to feed me bullshit about it's okay if we're 0-4. You know, we're gonna turn this thing around because it happened back in '99.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I hear you there, and I think the main issue is I think Nick Fitzgerald. I think he's injured because he does not look like the same player to me when he runs the ball. He's not nearly as explosive, and Fitzgerald has never been the most accurate guy, particularly on his downfield throws, and that's mm-hmm. just not developed. And I think they thought they could get that out of him. And now, obviously, he did have the big pass play in this last game, but it was damn dropped. I think that would have won him the damn game because I believe the score was 3-3 at that point, or something like that. It was a low scoring game, and that was right off the Felipe Franks turnover. You know, if they score a 50-yard touchdown, I think that would have blown the place open. But obviously, it got dropped. So I think that's his whole thing. Push the ball down the field. Push the ball downfield. But if you don't have a damn quarterback that can do it, I think that's a big reason why his offense is not coming together here.
Well, let me ask you, man, because you were pretty high on the backup. What's his name?
Keaton Thompson.
I mean, is there a chance we're going to see a little bit more of him? Because if he's hurt, then get him out there. Keaton's shown that he can play.
Right. Well, I have heard a little bit about that this week, and Joe Moorhead was kind of asked about it. He didn't really say yes or no. He just basically said we're just going to continue to get the best 11 out there. But I think the fact that, you know, Fitzgerald is a senior, he's a captain, and from what I'm hearing, they're not very confident in Thompson at this point to do, because basically what Moorhead's offense is they read it at the line, run or pass, based on the defense mm-hmm. that they're being looked at, most like a lot of offenses, but they basically do it every play and decide run or pass at the line. And they do not have confidence in Thompson to get all the checks and everything ready for whatever reason. That's what I've been told. They just do not have the confidence in him to do that at this point. And I think it would be a real issue to just say, to hell with it, let's roll him out there against Auburn and Alabama and all these teams. I mean, you're going to get him killed, you know?
Right. Well, I know, man, but maybe it's time to change something up because what they've been doing the last 2 weeks, the defense looks pretty good. The defense is still doing good. It's just the offense. They need a spark, man.
Mm-hmm. And they went away from the run in this last game, and it was stupid.
Yeah.
Okay, sticking to the opposite of stupid here, Alabama, Nick Saban, met with the media on Monday as well.
Roll Tide!
And guess what, Shane? It's a trap game. So here's Nick Saban on they're facing at Arkansas. They're going to Fayetteville. They're a 35-point favorite, but Nick Saban's a little bit concerned.
You know, Fayetteville has always been a difficult place, you know, to play. We have a lot of respect for Arkansas. They actually played, you know, Chad Morris being a new coach there. You can see every week they're getting better and better, and certainly played their, you know, best game of the year last week against Texas A&M and, you know, had opportunities to come back and at least tie the game if they could have finished, you know, with another score. So they have a lot of experience. They have a lot of returning starters. I think they've, you know, switched around quarterback personnel. You know, maybe that's sort of impeded some of their progress at times, but I think they now settled on, you know, Ty Story being the starting quarterback, and, you know, he's been productive, and, you know, this is a very capable team, and I know that this is what I call a little bit of a trap game for us in terms of, you know, all the folks out there look at who they played and what the scores were, and, you know, don't go get prepared the way you need to get prepared and go play to your standard and the level that you have to play to beat any team in the SEC on the road. So,
all right, Shane, this should be a fun one on Tell the Truth Tuesday, but are you buying Nick Saban's bullshit here?
No, man. No, I've been impressed with what Arkansas, where they're heading, mm-hmm. but I'm telling you what, to call this a trap game, they got Missouri next week. I mean, what's the and then Tennessee? I mean, the trap game's coming, I think, in the Missouri game. But I don't know. This is just coach being coach. And I when I first saw this, I just how did he say this without laughing? You know.
Well, do you think Arkansas will even score 6 points in this game?
Yeah, I do. Actually, I do. And but I just think Alabama scores at least 50. So.
I guess.
Yeah, this is going to be an ugly game. They're going to come out, and they may have three scores from special teams if Arkansas doesn't figure something out real quick.
You know what they should do to make this game more interesting? They should make Tua throw it right-handed and Jalen Hurts throw it left, and just see what the hell would happen.
That's it. Yeah, just don't let Jalen run. And I don't know. I want to see some more of the running attack, because one thing Arkansas did last week, they were a little bit more, I think, impressive on defense. So I'm just hoping that I mean, don't get me wrong. I joke about a 50-point game, but I would love nothing more than to see a ball game out of this and not a blowout. I mean, I know it's a 12 o'clock game. Not a lot of people are going to be watching, but I hope that they give them somewhat of a challenge, at least in the first half, make this thing interesting.
Okay, Shane, final thing I got before we jump off here. I don't know if you saw this, but the Atlanta Falcon rookie receiver, Calvin Ridley, obviously a former Alabama standout, he reacted on Twitter to the video of Jeremy Pruitt nearly breaking down in the post-game comments of the Georgia game. And his comment on Twitter was, "It's gonna get right," with little hand prayer emoji thing. So basically, I think he's saying, you know, Jeremy Pruitt's a good coach. He's going to get Tennessee turned around. What are your thoughts on a former Alabama player saying that, and particularly someone on the defensive, or excuse me, the offensive side of the ball, where Jeremy Pruitt, I'm sure he interacted with all these guys. He seems like a real player's coach, but
yeah,
someone he did not even, you know, wasn't his position coach or recruiter.
Yeah, I think that's good. I mean, that's what you want to see, because a lot of people made a big deal at Florida with him sending Sapp to the locker room, kicking the board. That, you know, they made it sound like it was a bad environment. And sometimes that's what some of these players need, is some of that tough love. And you see that here, just an ex-player that, you know, really didn't deal a lot with him coming out and saying good, positive things. So that's good. That's a good thing. That's what you want in your locker room. You want a leader in there, emotional leader. Apparently he's extremely emotional leader. And I don't know. I'm excited about it. I'm, you know, just kind of gelling this team and getting them back. The plus side, Mike, they can't lose this week, you know?
Well, okay, you're speaking from the Tennessee point of view, but what about the Alabama side? You know, like, would you want, I don't know, let's say Peyton Manning coming out and saying, like, the Gators are going to be all right under Mullen, you know? Do you see what I'm saying? Like,
oh, yeah.
Do you see any issue, not to say issue, but I'm just trying to figure out why in the hell an Alabama player is kind of talking up.
He's
basically helping Tennessee in recruiting, in my opinion.
You can't say Manning, though. I mean, Manning's like a staple. That's like saying Tim Tebow coming out and saying something positive to another team instead of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he's just a to say somebody like – not saying that Ridley's not, I mean, because he's a hell of an athlete. But –
okay, what about Josh Dobbs supporting Alabama? Is that a comparable?
You know
one?
What? I don't like it. Now that you worded it that way, I'm not because you want your players to be homers. You want them to just be all about your team. And I don't know, man. Maybe I don't know. That's a good one. No, I think that was
just kind of my main takeaway from this. I just thought it was odd. Not saying he's shouldn't have done it, or I mean, of course, he's got the right to say whatever the hell he wants, but I just thought it was very strange to me to see an Alabama player do this. But of course, I think at the same time, like, if Tennessee and Alabama were going after a guy, I'm pretty sure Calvin Ridley would tell him to go to Alabama. But so I'm not suggesting that he's going full Tennessee ham here. But
and again, we're reading into a couple of words on Twitter. We don't know the relationship that he has with Coach, and maybe they are a lot closer than we think. So, you know.
All right, Shane, that's all I've got on this one, unless you've got anything before we get off here.
No, buddy. I appreciate everybody taking the time to rate and review on iTunes, and appreciate the Florida love today. I've got a couple of tweets, not nearly as many tweeting at me saying you better sing, bitch. But this one was we had a few of them saying, "Well, Shane's a man of his word," and I was, as hard as that was. I even went to bed humming that song, Mike. I was like sitting there, and I was just, it's like a jingle. And I couldn't stop thinking about it. So I'm glad I got it completely flushed out of my mind today, and look forward to some more college football Saturday.
Well, Shane, you're a man of your word, and it sounds like you're starting to turn into a little bit of a Florida fan.
let's not get carried away, Mike.
But also on the same time, I'm sure all those guys, you know, they've got a lot of reason to celebrate. They're probably in great moods. They just kicked the shit out of Mississippi State and Tennessee. So I think I'd be in a pretty good mood myself.
Absolutely.
All right, Shane, I'll catch you on the next one. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We really appreciate it. And if you made it this far, if you wouldn't mind going just a step further, giving us a 5-star heart and rate and review us on iTunes, we'd really appreciate it. And we just keep giving you this content on a daily basis because we're doing it for you guys.
Yeah, buddy. Go Vols.